This is a previously aired program from 2014. Enjoy. And we are back here on Out of the Woods. Kate McLeod's here live with us in the studio. We're just talking about what older songs we could play, some old favorites, and we thought of one. And she's going to tell you about it right now, I suppose, or she's just going to play it. I'm not sure.
Well, this is Lark in the Morning. It's on my very first recording that Charles Soltell produced. And it's my big folk hit, you know, the tens of dollars hit, so, as we say.
All right.
I sing love lost, losing the time, letting it go free. Lark in the morning, another day before me. And I know that your love wasn't born on a promise for me. Lark in the morning, let it go free. But my eyes, my eyes, take me back to the sea. I grow so weary with no word from a lover. Lark in the morning, another day before me. And your love is gone, most likely to some other. Lark in the morning, let it go free. But my eyes, my eyes, take me back to the scene of love. My my eyes, my eyes, take me back to the scene of love. My eyes, my eyes.
Kate McLeod here live in the studio, and Lark in the Morning. Lark of Lark In.
Lark in the Morning.
Lark In, yeah.
There's also a fiddle tune by that name.
Okay. That's probably where the confusion comes
from. Yeah,
out
some with. Of the confusion of is that a song or is that a tune comes from.
That's a good one, though. Yeah, I'm sure I used to play that quite a bit back in the day. I was flipping through some of my early playlists the other day, trying to remember what I used to play, and I kept coming up with Me and My Medicine and Alabama Midwife.
Alabama Midwife was inspired by a book, and it was, I recorded it that night of the concert, but I just didn't like the take of it, so I didn't put it on there. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Put it as
based on a biography of a woman in Alabama who delivered babies for many years. A very, very interesting book during the whole civil rights movement, and it was very interesting. These books are actually on this recording with of books. The list of songs and books is not necessarily a list of books that I recommend people reading them all. You know, it's not like my favorite books. These are songs about my favorite books. It doesn't work that way. It just so happens that those particular books sparked some kind of further discussion in my mind. Some of them are amazing books and very important pieces of literature, and some of them are just, one of them is a self-published book that someone wrote about their family history, and it wasn't really necessarily a well-written book, but the story was amazing. So that's how that happened.
So there's no...
So don't go, I'm going to start a book club about this recording because you don't want to do that. That would be funny.
That would be funny.
I'll tell you which ones are good. But I wouldn't put them in the liner notes because I'm not going to tell you on air.
So you didn't have any comic books or travel guides?
No, but I did have a children's book.
That's right, the Beatrix Potter
one.
I love
the Beatrix Potter book.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's a good song,
too. Do you like that?
Yeah, I do like that.
I call that a children's song for adults.
That's the best kind of kid's CD, anyway. If you ever do a kid's CD, you have to do something for the grown-ups.
Do you want me to sing that one?
Sure.
It's pretty cute.
This
I'll try to get through
on
it.
The CD.
It is. This is a children's song for adults. Well, I'm a big Beatrix Potter fan because my mother was a scientist when she was working. She is a scientist. But Beatrix Potter, I don't know if very many people remember the little Peter Rabbit books. She wrote the whole series of Peter Rabbit, and she was famous for her watercolor illustrations
in
these little tiny books. The Tailor of Gloucester, and there's a whole list of these books, and she was a scientist. That was her passion. At the time that she was living, she wasn't allowed to work as a scientist in England because she was a woman. So she was apologized posthumously by the British scientific community for ignoring her work, and all of her papers were published, and she's quite the lady. She was an award-winning artist and author, and she was an award-winning farmer, in fact, and she was very wealthy by the time she died. She actually donated large parcels of land to the National Trust in England for land preservation. So I'm a big fan of hers.
How could you not be?
Is that enough? Is that enough of a reason? All of those things?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see if I can sing this song. This is called Lucy of Littletown. And it's based on the children's book of Beatrix Potter called The Tale of Mrs. Tiggywinkle, which is my personal favorite of hers. Lucy of Littletown lost her pocket handkerchief and her little penny somewhere on the ground. She's asking everywhere, in the bar, in the square, hoping her handkins and penny can be found. Tabby kitten just keeps on washing, washing, washing. Sally Henny Penny clucking, clucking, clucking. Sally says, I go barefoot, 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 and Robin, he just flew around. She hears Lily wording clean, out with little frills between, oh, smooth and hard, red, rusty spot, never he be seen, oh. If you please in my wash, if you please, and for all the little animals, I'm the one to clean them. Lucy jumped the stile, scrambled up the hillside, and found little footprints by the stream. They led her to a door underneath the forest floor, with a little kitchen ironing boards and cups of tea. There the laundry lady sniffled, sniffled, snuffled. Her little brown eyes, they twinkled, twinkled, twinkled. Beneath her petticoat were prickle, prickle, prickle. And Mrs. Tiggywinkle sings. She sang Lily white and clean, with little frills between, oh, smooth and hard, red, rusty spot, never he be seen, oh. If you please, am I wash, if you please, and for all the little animals, I'm the one to clean them. And there in the basket were Lucy's lost handkerchiefs, mingled with the other clean clothes. Mittens and waistcoats, Peter Rabbit's blue coat, all inspected by Mrs. Tiggy Winkle's nose. And they delivered clothing, skipping, skipping. Jenny Wren sang, thank you, thank you, thank you. And everywhere were squirrels and mice and bunnies, and all the little lambs were white and clean. And they delivered clothing, skipping, skipping. Mrs. Tiggy Winkle went running, 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 and Lucy thought she saw a hedgehog leaving behind Mrs. Tiggy Winkle's clothes. Singing lily white and clean, I with little frills between, oh, smooth and hard red rusty spot, never here be seen, oh. If you please in my wash, if you please, and for all the little animals, I'm the one to clean them.
Kate McLeod. Like it.
That is just too much fun. Thank you for allowing me to sing that silly little song.
Hey, I like kids' books. I love children's books. So that's my reading level right there. So.
You can tell I'm not afraid to make all my mistakes in public, which is what I do for a living.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Yeah, I still have all my son's old children's books from when he was really, really small. I can't get rid of them. I have boxes full of the darn
things.
Oh,
I do too. You know? Well, they still have the... I still feel my kids' energy on the books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I can't get rid of those either.
He's in college now, so yeah.
And then I have some that I saved from when I was a little kid, and those are really fun to pick up and hold and remember reading those.
I wish I still had mine, but my parents weren't as sentimental as I am. But Kate McLeod's here with us live in the studio here on Out of the Woods, playing some songs that are on her new CD, Kate McLeod at Ken Sanders Rare Books, a collection of songs inspired by books. Great stuff. And it's on the Waterbug label. And where can folks pick that one up?
Well, by now it's in distribution. So I guess that means, what does distribution mean these days, the way the music business is? Definitely on the waterbug.com site. That's the first place I would go because it does support a small business. So other than that, you can find it at all the regular places online. I'm sure it's on Amazon and it's on CD Baby, and digitally it's available through iTunes. And it's in limited stores, depending on who carries that distribution company. So
there you go. Go pester your local store.
Yeah. If you do a search, katemcleod.com, you'll find all kinds of information about that.
It's a great CD. I love your introductions on some of the songs there, too. Like, I think the first one I played when I got it was Blue Highways.
And I just got to meet William Lee Teetmoon.
Oh, did you?
On Sunday night.
Did you?
Last Sunday night.
Oh,
I'd been in touch with him for maybe 25, close to 30 years about the two songs that are on that recording, on this recording, Prairie Earth and Blue Highways. And we'd only written, like, first it was snail mail, and, you know, we'd emailed some about it, but I'd never met him personally. So I was playing at a festival, the Big Muddy Festival in Boonville, and he lives about 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
So I emailed him. I said, I'm going to be right there. I'm going to take you out to eat. And I, of course, sometimes it's not always a good idea to meet people that
your
you really
heroes.
Want to meet.
Exactly. My wife says that about authors all the time.
I really had no idea what was going
to
happen.
My wife won't go to book signings just because, you know, she's afraid she's going to come away thinking that one of her favorite authors is, you know, the devil or something.
So I didn't know what to expect. Yeah, exactly like that. And then we had a 3-hour dinner. We closed the restaurant. They had to get rid of it.
Oh, that's great.
It was great.
That's great.
So I can sing one of those.
Yeah, sure.
I can sing Blue Highways.
That'd be great.
Because I don't have my harmonica with me, which I use on Prairie Earth. So this was the first song that I wrote based on his books. Blue Highways was his big hit. It was his first big hit in literature. And he had just gotten a divorce, and he decided he needed to go find himself. You know, we all know how that feels. And he bought a van and went out on the road. And I always say that it inspires people to get a divorce and buy a van and go out on the road. So it's a very interesting book. He covers a lot of interesting territory. And it's called Blue Highways, not because he was upset about anything. It's because at that point on the maps, the back roads were printed in blue. And so he didn't take anything but the back roads. So here we go. My name is William Least Heat Moon. I've seen America out on the byroads, roads that you travel when you were lost. I quenched my thirst and prayed against the worst, searching for six calendars. Cafes out on the blue highways. Some say the old ways are far behind. I say they're more living old ways than new ways. It takes the blue highways to show you the signs, and I've seen firsthand destruction of the land. Third degree, second, and worse. Out on the blue highways, silver lightning and old ghost towns. People have come and gone, ghost dancing going on. Seems like I know all the folks here by name, with sugar running, fish in the rain, and monks in the mountains. Out on the blue highways, the least that I have come to know are how my thoughts in a circle go. East by northwest, west by southeast, signs of life in whoever you meet, with miles of highway there at my feet. I've been looking for some common ground out on the blue highway.
Kate McLeod, Blue Highways. I'm a Blue Highways kind of guy myself.
Yeah, me too.
Back roads. Of course, yep. Around here this time of year, you try doing that, you're going to leave your axle behind. But they have all the roads posted around here with the weight limits, and they're full of potholes and frost heaves. And
I noticed.
So you got to stay on the highways right now if you want your car to stay intact for more than 5 minutes. But... Great, great stuff. Yes, and that's on the new CD. And was that one on one of your other recordings? That's a new one?
No, actually, I wrote it decades ago, and I just was saving it. I don't know why, but apparently I did know why. Somewhere in the back of my brain, I just saved it. And
I didn't think I'd heard it before.
No, but it's a very old one of mine. I have lots of songs in notebooks, and it's just I've been writing since I was a teenager. But, you know, I didn't do this for a living for very... I've,
only been doing this out and about for a while. I raised three children. I stayed home for 10 years. I worked at the violin making school in Salt Lake City. I studied violin making, which is why I moved to Salt Lake, because I'm originally from Washington, D.C. And I have been, though, as a hobby, starting out writing songs just to make sense of the world around me. And then my station in my community kept inviting me on to sing my songs. And then I played somewhere, and Charles Soltell heard me and said, "We got to get you a record. You know, we got to get you a record." I can't do it. He has a Texas accent. Obviously, I'm really bad at Texas accents. But so it just, one thing after another led to me doing this now, which is fine with me. I've been playing music all my life, and obviously I play the fiddle. We talked about that because I've often hired as a fiddle player and violin player, and I have been playing in my region for decades, so I'm quite well known there, even at the grocery store. I have to worry about how I dress when I go out of the house.
But it took you to tell
But not outside of that region. It's funny. I have the funniest story about that was my daughter and I were shopping, and we were buying our stuff separately. So she was at one cashier and I was at another. And the woman at her cashier register said, "Oh, you're McLeod. Are you related to Kate McLeod, the musician?" And my daughter said, "Yeah, I'm her daughter." And the cashier said, "No, she doesn't have kids." And I was standing at the next line listening to this whole thing, and this woman apparently thought she knew me well enough that she knew I didn't have kids.
Oh, that's funny.
It's very funny. That kind of stuff, it just cracks me up, how people think they know you or something because you're a performer. Well, you think my daughter would know.
Yeah. Well, it's probably even worse if you're... You know, like you're an actor or something.
Yeah.
Because have characters to they identify with.
They believe that you are that character.
Yeah, right. Totally. But.
I've been intermittently and haphazardly been playing around the country. Mostly when people invite me to come play. And then I just, you know, lack some of the infrastructure needed for that. But also, it's been a while. It's hard to work out of my region. I mean, it's a big country. And I think still in many ways, the what's going out there folk music-wise, people just don't expect it. They don't expect it. I've had all kinds of funny statements like, "This comes out of Utah? You know, how is that possible?" Things like that. But it's this, we call it the Zion Curtain. We work from behind the Zion Curtain.
Oh, really? So,
yeah. We joke about it ourselves.
I've never been out there, but I have another friend who lives out that way, too. Alicia McGovern.
Oh, I know Alicia.
You know Alicia?
Yeah, she's a friend of mine, yeah.
Yeah, she was I had her on the show last year. She's a good friend, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's fun.
Yeah.
But good stuff from Salt Lake City, folks.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting country. And I, having grown up on the East Coast, and I understand the East Coast, and now I really understand that whole Western region. And I've been spending a lot of time up in the Northwest. It's very much informed me about the nature of our country and the landscapes. I've spent a lot of time with the landscapes so that I can really understand that. Sometimes I write music based on landscapes and things like that.
Oh, that's kind of really cool. Yeah, my friend Christina Stykos up in Vermont did that too with the Wyoming Territory CD she came out with. Mm-hmm. So that's like a retreat out there and just writing songs and traveling around.
It's different. It's a different culture out there. It took me a long time to get used to it. And, well, when I first moved there, I was a student. And I thought, oh, I just can't take this. And I was there long enough, just about when I thought I would leave, I thought, I love it here. I completely flip-flopped.
Really?
I thought I couldn't take the desert, and I thought, where are the trees and all this stuff? And then I grew to love that space.
Well, now that we're empty nesters, hopefully we'll start traveling and get out of here once in a while. But, I'd love to get out that way. I've never really been west of St. Louis, believe it or not. been out of the country, but I've never been west of St. Louis in my own country, so it's kind of sad.
I do have a song from that whole region. I was an artist in residence once for the Entrada Institute, which is an environmental arts organization out there. And they have an artist in resident every year to compose music or art or create art based on the Colorado Plateau. And that's when I wrote that Butch Cassidy song was Here, which is on the recording. I think I'll sing that. Okay. When I was down near the Capitol Reef National Park, they housed me for a while. Everything around there is based on some of the history there, and Butch Cassidy was a main figure of the history there. Butch Cassidy was here. It's that little sign, that little phrase is just about everywhere you go. So I became really curious as to why, what is it about Butch Cassidy? What is it about some of these outlaws that are so interesting to people? So I did a lot of research about it. I read Robert Patterson's book, but then I also did some other research from periodicals that were in libraries in that area about Butch Cassidy, and they interviewed some of his, some of the people that he'd known in the area. One particular thing stuck out when people were discussing the question of, was this person a good person or a bad person, or where along the lines is the moral compass of someone like Butch Cassidy, who is, not only was he known as an outlaw, but he was also known as a very generous person. He paid off mortgages for people. He was very much into small business. He didn't like talk about big business these days, but back then he was against the onset of big business in the 1800s. He was already saw that stuff go down. And that was part of his personal philosophy. And so there's always been a perspective of the question of whether or not this person was okay or not. And a lot of that is in the song, but also there's this one statement that his friend said in this interview that was printed, which I think about now for myself. He said, Butch was square with himself in his own estimation, I'm sure. Which I really like that statement.
There you go.
So I ask myself if I'm square with myself in my own estimation. I just I find that a really great sentence.
I think we all ask ourselves that from time to time.
A lot of the people that were roaming around the country there and living out of the way of the great populations, they were philosophers and naturalists, and they wind up in these circumstances. So here we go with Butch Cassidy was here. Before he was a rustler, he was Robert Leroy Parker. Born in Utah in 1866, he was the first of 13 children. Once such a little babe, with no appetite for his simple life, and neither would it stay that way. The ground here is so dry, here it can choke the means of living. Nature's only kind itself when it's being warm and giving. We've tamed it with provisions, we've hats and farms and schemes. Why should Bob's life be tamed like that for the sake of someone else's dreams? Some say it's all in how you look at it, man. They say it's all in how. We are an animal of language, and when all was said and done, when he changed his name to Butch Cassidy, it sealed his fate on the tongues of the lawmen and the women and the cowboys and the young. Now people still find wonder in his outlaw trail and the guns. So he took to rustling cattle from the long arms of the rich. He fought against the onset of the big business, and he took to stealing fortunes from the mining companies. Spit. And he grew to love the smell of gold, and he grew to love the chase of it. Some say it's all in how you look at it, ma'am. They say it's all in how you look at it. All the stories of his robberies became renowned throughout the West. He romanced the getaways, reputation would attest that the discretion of the desert can breed the worst and the best, where even the law is sometimes suspect by the needs of the rest. Oh, his wild bunch and the ladies, they grew richer every year. From Castlegate to Robber's Roost, they reign with a little fear, and with the dubious distinction of being fair with the poor. Butch was square with himself in his own estimation, I'm sure. Some say it's all in how you look at it, man. They say it's all in how you look at it. And by the time the century ended and town lights began to glow, the wild men were driven from the Colorado Plateau. While the banks increased in numbers, so did the posses grow. So they left their canyon country and they echoed south through Mexico. And in defining acts of bravery and our relation to fear, who of us will spar with chance, will enough to be revered, or grapple with our enemies until our bodies are cold? We might live another year, but we say Butch Cassidy was here. Some say it's all in how you look at it, man. They say it's all in how.
All right.
Wow, I can't believe I got through that. I sometimes, you know, there are a lot of words in my song, a lot of lyrics in some of my songs, and I just have to like cross my fingers when I start.
I don't know how you people remember all the words when you're singing these things without having it right in front of you. I would be horrible if I was a singer-songwriter. I can't remember anything from 1 second to the next, so I don't know how you do it. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Yes, Kate McLeod's here live in the studio with us.
Well, we were just talking about some more of the songs on the recording, the At Ken Sanders Rare Books recording of mine.
The new one, yes.
Yes, the brand new one, and which took 30 years to put together because that's how old some of the songs are. And I'm only 30, so it's quite miraculous.
It's amazing how that works.
I'm going to sing this song called The Annual Menhaden. And this was inspired by Peter Mathiasen's book, Men's Lives. Peter Mathiasen just passed away about a week ago, maybe less.
Oh, wow.
Yes, he passed away on Saturday. And so I'm going to sing this for him. This book, Men's Lives, I love this book. It was a documentation of a community on the tip of Long Island. It was a fishing community. And he spent a lot of time with them. And the discussion in the book, the point that he was getting at was that communities like that are dissipating. And the strength of communities, the strength of small communities and their rituals, and the strength of people doing things together over long periods of time is being lost. And it's definitely worth talking about and singing about. And so this particular song, The Annual Menhaden, is about the annual time once a year the fishermen would net the menhaden fish for fertilizer, and they would send it to the farmers to plant in the ground. And they would do this together. It took 40 or 50 men to handle the nets in the water, and the women would be cooking on the beach all day. This is a big deal. It sounds like a lot of fun to me. But I also couldn't remember the last time I saw 40 or 50 men in my neighborhood doing anything of any use together. So.
Useless.
So this is the annual Menhaden. Praise the Atlantic and the Montauk Sound and the ghost of a chance of making a living, being a fisherman and doing that seasonal dance by hauling in the annual Menhaden. It was once a year for the spring haul, when out of the earth came the need for Menhaden. They're taking it inland to make the corn crops so much better for the sake of them all. By hauling in the annual Menhaden. And how many of them did it take? How many of them did it take? It took 40 or 50 men, hoping that the net won't break. And never did one stand alone. It was early in the morning to late in the day, usually caught in the dusting of the spray, but somewhere between the hard line and what had to give. And the men who were lost, who would haunt all the rest of them, everyone helped. And the sea gave away for them, sun on the water, new hope for the day. And how many of them did it take? How many of them did it take? It took 40 or 50 men, hoping that the net won't break. And never did one stand alone.
Kate McLeod, here on Out of the Woods. Very nice. So, Long Island. Now that all that's out there are people in Speedos and things,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, they talked about that. He talked about that in the book.
Unfortunate. Yeah, anywhere you go on the East Coast now, if you want to go to the beach, I'm sure it's a lot different than it used to be back in the day. But... All right, folks. Well, we're going to take our break, get in that station identification, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.